Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday. I apologize. It's Wednesday, February 2nd, 2022. Wednesday, February 2nd, 2022. And as always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. That's the mechanism by which I make my life so much better. One of the things I tell people is that use of these tools has improved my life beyond what words can describe. But one of the things that I give as an indicator is I spend the tiniest fraction of my time in life in the negative emotions today compared to what I used to have as my life experience prior to using these tools. You can also download the actual process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. It is a deceptively simple tool. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through the worksheet process. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you click on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope that you will do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments, questions, testimonials, questions for clarification, questions to refute some of the things that we have observed with this work. All of those are welcome. If you have any of those, you can give us a call at 563-999-3581. And when you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I can announce you by your area code. We can have a conversation. We specifically enjoy when people do that. It's a fun process. It's also, it just makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. What's our intention with this work? Our intention is to be of service. And it just makes it easier for us to be of service when you give us a call and let us know what would serve you better. This year, because of response from several people, we are working our way through the Way of Mastery. And the Way of Mastery is part of the Christ Mind pathway. And yesterday, at the very end of the show, we finished reading through the first lesson yet again, which leaves us ready to start the second lesson. And these first two lessons, the primary thing they want us to take away, there are several things they want us to take away from these lessons. One of them is we are in the creative process always. Whether we realize it or not, what we choose to focus our conscious awareness upon is the dynamic which creates our experience of life. So we are always creating. Most of the time, because of the way we've been conditioned and trained, we are not creating consciously. We're not aware that it's our choices of how to interpret and respond to life that are creating our experience of life. But lack of awareness doesn't change the dynamic. The process is still engaged. Our mind energy is a creative force. Whatever we choose to focus it on, we're going to experience more of that. Another thing that this pathway wants us to understand right up front is that seriousness is a roadblock. Seriousness is a constriction, taking yourself too seriously. This is where this pathways like this, spiritual teachings like this would differ from religions, where they want you to be very pious and very serious about developing your love and being very rigorous. And it says quite often, at least two or three times in just the first two lessons, please, this is all about getting playful, looking upon everything you've done, every fearful place in your mind with gentleness and childlike playfulness and curiosity. And at the end of the second lesson, it says, please do this with joy. At the end of the first lesson, we just finished reading this yesterday, it says, therefore, beloved friends, dance. Dance. Rejoice and play often. And when you do that, these lessons, and you dance and rejoice and play often with these lessons, it's going to stir up stuff in you that's not so pleasant. Every place in your mind where you've let fear make a home. When that happens, what should I do? Run to some ritual, beat myself up, prostrate myself and say, you know, I'm unworthy? No. Dance, rejoice, and play often again. Let these things come up. Look at them. Embrace them. Comfort your negative emotions the way you would comfort a wounded child, Krishnamurti would say. Understand, I have created this. If I don't like how it feels, I can choose again. So the second lesson begins with, it is with great joy that I come forth to abide with you, and it is a great truth that I come often unto many. But because of what you've learned in your world, you have often believed that I am just a figment of your imagination. I can be that voice that steals quietly through the space between your own thoughts. It's easy for you to think that that's just an illusion. Yet I say that I come often unto many of you. And I come not alone in my effort to commune and communicate with you. There is in truth a host of friends that come to create a vortex, a circumference of energy. We come, even as you hear these words, we come into your space to set the tone. If you would well receive it, there are many friends, unseen by physical eyes, that have come forth to contribute and to support this communication. Why is that important? Always, in each and every moment of your experience, you, as a soul, as a divine spark of consciousness, you are deliberately choosing to create forms of communication. Again, this is just like a jackhammer. This work is like a velvet jackhammer. Listen to that last paragraph again. It's a paragraph, but it's only one sentence, this statement. As always, in each and every moment of your experience, here's the jackhammer part. You are a soul, a divine spark of consciousness. This work, this pathway, is all about getting that awareness to stay top of mind for you. Some people have never had it as a top of mind awareness. Some people have never been introduced to the concept that as a soul, they are a divine spark of the consciousness of the one mind. This pathway keeps saying it over and over and over again in the hopes that eventually you'll let yourself soften and let that seed into the soil so it can get cultivated into a present moment awareness more and more often in your life. As a soul, as a divine spark of consciousness, you are deliberately choosing to create the forms of communication that you share with everyone and everything around you. You do it with the raiment that you put on the body, the clothes, the accoutrements that you place on the body. You do it with your gestures. You do it with the sound of your voice. You do it with every culture and time frame in which you incarnate. You are constantly and only creating forms through which you communicate. Communication is an attempt to rest in communion with all of creation. What you are choosing to perceive, believe, and accept as true will always be radiated through you and through your communication devices, which include the body. And this happens so that you might transfer your perceptions to another and that they might know who you believe you are and which voice you are committed to. I have often said that the body is a teaching and learning device, and all forms of communication affect the process of teaching and learning. When you arise in the morning, the first thought that makes a home in your mind, you'll act on it. It may not be the first thought that passes through your mind, but the first thought that makes a home in your mind will drive your actions. You may stretch the body. You may smile. You may frown. You might be filled with peace. Or you might feel the weight of the world. And these things come not because you have perceived them outside yourself, but because you have allowed them inside the depth of your consciousness. And that depth of your consciousness remains pure and undefiled and radiant beyond all boundaries forever. As that thought makes a home in your mind, you literally begin to transform the communication device called the body into that which carries, expresses, and reflects what has come to make a home within your mind. Please remember that the mind is not where the body is. It does not abide within the body, but the body does abide within the field of your mind. Communication is creation. These two are one and the same. And therefore, if you would create well and consciously, ask yourself, what am I committed to communicating? What will my creations express? What will they convey to others? For what I seek to convey reveals what I believe is the truth of my higher self to the world. Therefore, beloved friends, as we begin to focus on, to refine, to deepen, and to mature into the way of the heart, it's wise to begin at the beginning. So here it is. The beginning of this pathway is simply this. You are as the Creator created you to be. You are an infinite focus of consciousness. Your very sense of existence is nothing more than a feedback loop or a feedback mechanism. What's its purpose? So you can witness the effects of the choices you are making. Where are you making those choices? In the very deep, deep depth of your mind. The higher self, the spark of the divine mind that rests right alongside the mind of God. Therefore, in each moment of your existence, which includes this bodily incarnation, you are literally allowing, through deliberate choice, though perhaps unconscious, you are allowing yourself to bring forth a vibration of thought or a vibration of creation, and to share it, to communicate it to the world around you in an attempt to experience communion with all of life, whether that is with a friend, a parent, a child, a beloved, or even the clouds that pass through the sky, or with the earth itself. Each gesture, each thought, the way that the body breathes, all of these things are going on constantly. And they are communicating or revealing the effect of what you have allowed to make a home in your mind. Understand this well. The way of the heart requires. This is a requirement. This is not optional. No one will force you to do this, but if you are going to be on the path of the pathway of the way of the heart, this is how you get there. It requires that you allow yourself to rest in the simplicity of the following truth. Quote, I am pure spirit, undefiled and unaffected by anything or anyone. I am given full power to choose and therefore to create my experience as I would have it be. The way of the heart means I let this rest in my mind as a simple observed truth. I am pure spirit. I am not affected by anyone or anything outside of me. I have been given full power to choose and therefore create my experience as I would have it be. That's the essence of these first two lessons. I'm creating my experience, you're creating yours. When I get serious, that's my ego. Seriousness is like a virus. It is a distortion. It causes contraction. It causes movement away from the awakened heart. What's the awakened heart? The awakened heart is that which allows all things, accepts all things, embraces all things, feels compassion for all things, and thereby transcends all things. So, that's our intro for today, and the first, I guess it's only two pages of the second lesson in the Way of Mastery, the Way of the Heart, and we have plenty of time for conversation. Our call in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What is on your mind? We have had several days of monologue and reading from the Way of Mastery, and we're open for feedback about how this is landing for you and or stirring up turbulence for you. I heard from somebody yesterday that while they thought it was a really good show, it stirred up so much stuff that they felt activated or agitated, and they felt like they better go back and re-listen to it because they can't even remember what it was that was so pressing or activating. So what's on your mind today? How can we support you? 563-999-3581. If you call that number, please press 1, and it'll put the little hand icon by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. We had our support group yesterday, and we listened to or watched the talk by Guy Finley that I mentioned in the intro yesterday. And it was from sometime in January, maybe January 12th. It's available if any of you want to look it up and listen to it or watch it. If you go to guyfinley.org/channel, C-H-A-N-N-E-L, the title of that talk was What to Do When Your World Turns Upside Down. And it's a full-hour talk that's available on YouTube. It's also available free through the guyfinley.org/channel. And I believe that the date on it was January 12th, 2022. But you can find it if you scroll down on the guyfinley.org/channel webpage. All you have to do is give them a valid email, and they'll let you in for free. And the title is, What to Do When Your Whole World Turns Upside Down. And as I was mentioning yesterday in the intro, this is the this is a flow of synchronicity that's been just rattling my cage these past few days, past few weeks, that so much of what Guy says in that talk is almost exactly the same thing that we're reading in The Way of Mastery in the first two lessons. It seemed as though Guy was drawing on many years of reading Krishnamurti, so he was channeling Krishnamurti's core observations and the realization that when I observe the dynamic that's causing any upset within me, when I see it clearly all the way to the root of it, the upset is dissolved. And it led me to be talking yesterday about how, in the support group anyway, about how if I have somebody who with any kind of upset, emotional upset in their voice, tell me that they know exactly what the problem is, I can know into the depth of my soul that they have no clue what the problem is, Because as Krishnamurti and other great spiritual teachers have observed, when I know what it is that's causing my pain, my fear, my sadness, my guilt, my shame, my judgment, when I see it all the way to its root, it loses its power to generate the negative emotions in me. As we talk about in this work, the negative emotions, the very best use in my life for any negative emotion that I experience is as an alarm system to wake me up to the fact that my thoughts are off the mark. I'm not perceiving accurately. I have in that very moment been creating a false perception, and then without being aware of it, I'm treating that perception as real, as accurate, and I'm creating the pain that I say I want to get rid of. So the best thing for me to do as an ongoing pattern is to train myself to stay more and more consciously aware, moment to moment, of the beginnings, the little inklings of upset, negativity, judgment. And as soon as I become aware that my thoughts have tripped down that pathway to begin to initiate a negative experience, I take a breath, turn the focus inside myself, and gently, with that childlike curiosity, begin exploring how is it that I'm creating all of this disruption and pain? What's the mechanism that has me moving away from what Michael Rice would call that faculty of true perception, that spiritual faculty of being able to see each and every one of my brothers and sisters as beings of brilliance and light, just as I see and understand myself to be a spark of that divine light? What is it in my thought process, in my family conditioning, in my culture, that's got me distracted from that core truth? Because that's happening inside me, and in this moment, nowhere else on the planet, nowhere else in all of creation are the upsets happening that are busy creating the pain, the fear, the sadness, the upset that I say I don't want to feel. I'm creating it inside myself. The more I wake up to that, the more I see the dynamics of how it's unfolding, the easier it is for me to intervene and choose again. And it's amazing how the mind-body energy system and, you know, this way of mastery says in several places in just the first two lessons, please understand this is not an intellectual pursuit. This is about the awakened heart. The awakened heart is about the feeling, the awareness of energies, emotions, connection to other sparks of light. This is why in my work with people, we get so much more done when we quit talking every time the talking we're doing stirs up emotions in someone. And we do somatic or body-oriented awareness and therapeutic experiential approaches. And we say, okay, so in response to what I just said, you had some tears come up. What are you noticing? Where are you feeling the upset in your body? What emotion word would you put on that upset? Check in to this energy that's moving in what you call your physical body and ask it, what's this about? And routinely, we bypass the spinning conscious logical that Guy Finley was saying. I interrupted his talk last night to read directly from The Way of Mastery in Lesson 1 because it says, look, this is not an intellectual exercise. The awakened heart is not an intellectual process. Page 5 in The Way of the Heart, it says, the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. Well, Guy Finley was saying almost exactly the same words in his talk last night. The Way of Mastery says, for indeed, your intellect is that aspect of the mind that was never designed to be your master. It was designed to be a very humble and in some respects a very stupid servant. But a servant of what? Of the awakened heart. The awakened heart is that which feels all things, embraces all things, trusts all things, and allows all things. So here we were in a session the other day, and this person, I said something, and this person was moved to tears. And so I literally, without even talking about it as the awakened heart, I started talking to the awakened heart in this person and said, where are you feeling the energies that are connected to the tears that are coming up? And she pointed to her chest, and I said, okay, is it shallow, is it deep? Is it hot or is it cold? Is it moving? Is it heavy or light? Does it have a color? Does it have a shape? And if so, is the shape smooth or jagged? Is it large or small? Letting the person get in touch with the energies, the experience, from a felt sense perspective. And then talking to that energy as specifically as they can make their awareness tune into it and ask, okay, so when is one of the first times this got put in your body? And just trust the process, just like we do every time we do a reality management worksheet. We cancel the goal and we ask to be shown the hidden part of our mind, our body, our energy system, the flow of energies around us. And trust the process, however bizarre. I mean, this is a person who's almost 40 years old, and almost instantly she said, well, that's weird. And I said, what? And she said, well, that went back to something that happened when I was 7 years old. And I did something, you know, that was very innocent for me as a seven-year-old, and I got basically brutally spanked on my naked rear end for that. Now, somebody who's almost 40 years old in a psychologist's office talking about, you know, whatever we're talking about, there's no way to logically think, oh, this is going to go back to that event where I got spanked when I was 7 years old. There is not a single way that I'm aware of, that I've ever learned, that would take us from my office as competent adults into that person's mind and direct us right to the 7-year-old trauma. And this is not a repressed memory. This is something this person has known of and talks about with the other people that were involved in it, and they joke about it, you know, awkward emotional joking about those things her whole life. And yet, when she allows herself to turn inside and recognize that if she's feeling it, she's creating it, and that it's a product of energies moving in her. And if she gets out of the conscious logical mind of trying to figure it out, gets into the body, the awakened heart, and asks to be shown, things can bubble up, connections can be made, insights. And she left that session with the knowledge of how to do a mind shifter that will probably give her all kinds of new awareness, not even close to what she had at her conscious logical mind when she walked in the session. Because with all the different trainings I've ever been given, I have no way of moving from a conscious logical replay of life or what was going on in her life that day and making that connection to that 7-year-old event. This is not an intellectual exercise. The way of the heart is the way of felt sense of emotions, of energy flow, of openness, of allowance, of acceptance, embracing all things, allowing all things, accepting all things, trusting all things, and thereby transcending all things. So, 563-999-3581. We've got about 20-some minutes left. If we want to use them all, we're going to have a replay of something Michael and Jeannie did about Beatitudes for our second segment of the show today. So we have plenty of time for comments and questions. What's on your mind? How can we support you? 563-999-3581. Nobody in the chat room, 7 or 8 people on the call, plenty of time. What is your pleasure? Yesterday was the release of another On Your Mind podcast hosted by Journey's Dream, another integrative psychiatrist. I'm still asking for people's support and help in getting last week's episode in front of people that you might know who are veterans and or who have family members who are in active duty. It was the interview that I was privileged to do with a retired brigadier general and a retired colonel, and they're asking for help and support in spreading the message of what the work they're doing and how they're trying to help both active duty and veterans. And it is wonderful stuff. There are some rather harsh realities in our lives with the stresses that our active duty military people go through, and with the suicide rates and this brigadier general and colonel, while in active duty in Germany, decided to take action, to be proactive and to create a program to educate and support and develop resources within the non-commissioned officers, who are basically just young people, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, who are smart enough and good enough at their soldiering to become leaders. But often they're leading and they don't have a clue how to do their own life skills, basic life skills. They came from trauma in their own families and they've barely had time in civilian life to develop adult coping mechanisms, and now they find themselves in a leadership role. So they developed a program called the 360 program, and they teach these life skills, emotional skills to these young leaders, and they're asking for our help in spreading the word so more and more people can find out about it and more people can take advantage of the program. They highlight the fact that this is science-based, it's run by experts, and it's a phenomenal program. Again, you can get access to that or pass that along to people at journeysdream.org/podcast. And I'm still wide open for suggestions. I had somebody yesterday send me the link to a local Chicago area holistic practitioner who does a lot of homeopathic medicine and Ayurvedic medicine. And they recommend that I contact that person to get an interview going. If you know someone like that, or you've read a good book like that, or you know a friend or family member who's gone to a practitioner and gotten tremendous benefit, or you've, you know, even heard about a really good book, even if you haven't read it yet, I'm wide open to those suggestions. My email is tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. You can email the suggestions to me there, or you can give us a call now at 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1. And we'll have a conversation. What is on your mind? I would ask that you, as we all, can send loving thoughts and prayers to everybody who is struggling with the coronavirus. I heard of another friend of the family over on Saturday that was the father of one of my sons in grade school, and he died of coronavirus complications and pneumonia. There are people we talk to on our support groups that are just absolutely overwhelmed with all the dynamics of the politics and the isolation and the not isolating and trying to keep people safe. So I routinely recommend Pierre Pradervan's Gentle Art of Blessing. And I think I read something the other day about from the Dalai Lama's book that when we meditate and think loving thoughts and focus on our heart space, there are measurable changes of light photons being emitted from our heart. And it can be 5,000 times greater with just a little bit of effort on our part. So, if you have any extra time in your day, that's a wonderful way to spend it. If you can make some extra time in your day to send a blessing, first to yourself and then to everyone around you and everyone within your thought field and everyone within your extended family. And the more you do that, the more you reach the space where your heart will be dripping with honey, as we talked about in the Pierre Pradervan interview. So we've got about 15 or 16 minutes left, and it's a Wednesday. We got 2 more days this week, plenty of time to finish Lesson 2 in the Way of Mastery, which I will do tomorrow and Friday, and or kind of tease or dip my toe into the third lesson, it was the breakthrough lesson. When I first started doing this work and I was dealing with Dr. Michael Rice, I knew what I was dealing with. Michael was very, very voraciously promoting his work as the only place that he's found this knowledge of forgiveness. And he was actively working to look for any difference between the purity of what he was teaching and any other work. And he would immediately discount any other work as having missed the point. And so I knew, as I was working with this Way of Mastery, that Michael Rice would not like this, because as far as his regulatory speech goes, this book talks about you are loved, loving, and lovable forever. And Michael would say, no, love is not a verb, You can't love someone. No one can love you, etc. So I knew that the mindset he had would preclude him from looking at what this had to offer. And then, after several months of reading and rereading the first two lessons and having it sing to me, I stepped into the third lesson, and I found there, through the filter of my mind, eyes, and ears, I found words that resonated with me to be almost exactly what Dr. Michael Rice teaches from the Kabor's manuscript and from the Course in Miracles. And the Course in Miracles says, open a curtain in your practice, right? Put down everything you think you want, your trifling treasures put away, and leave a clean and open space for the Christ mind to come. And Michael went back to Course in Miracles and read that after he'd had the experience with the Kabor's manuscript and their translation work, and they came up with that the word that got translated as forgiveness in the King James Version of the Bible was really the word shebag in the ancient Aramaic, and it meant to cancel, to dismantle, to drop, to put down. And he said, oh my gosh, here's the Course in Miracles saying, open a curtain in your practice by putting down everything you think you want, your trifling treasures put away, and leave a clean and open space. He says, oh my gosh, that's canceling the goal. That's leaving the open space, that's asking to be shown. Oh my gosh, it's the same thing. And when I stumbled across the third lesson, I read some things there that said to my eye and ear, oh my gosh, this is the same teaching. This is the same consciousness. To forgive means to choose to release another person from the perceptions that I have been projecting upon them. That's the same thing. I dismantle my false perceptions. I cancel, I shebag, I put down my false perceptions, and I come to understand no one's ever done anything to me. I'm the one that created my own experience. I created my own happiness. I created my own offense. And as I said in a previous talk, it came to me last week to say, please, don't take offense, even if it's offered. It's up to you to take offense or not take offense. So choose again. Don't take offense, even if somebody comes up to you swearing at you and criticizing you and insulting you and name-calling you. You're the one who remains in complete control. This is the last thing that I just read. Understand this well. The way of the heart requires that you allow yourself to rest in the simplicity of this truth. You are pure spirit. You are undefiled and unaffected by anyone or anything. Somebody comes up to you, flips you the bird, swears at you, insults you, they're offering offense. Please don't take it. Walk away. Don't create the experience of being offended or upset. It's all within your experience. You are pure spirit. You are undefiled and unaffected by anyone or anything. You are given full power to choose and to therefore create your experience as you would have it be. So remember, even if somebody comes up to you and offers you offense, don't take it. If they offer you an Oreo cookie, feel free. They offer you some really good organic cacao, healthy, but if they offer you insult, and that presents an opportunity for you to create offensiveness and an offensive reaction in you, feel free to decline the offer. So we'll get more into that. We'll finish lesson two. Maybe we'll dip our toe in lesson three tomorrow and Friday. And we've got about 10 minutes left and nobody with a comment or question, and that's as far as I want to go today in the way of mastery. So unless you've got a comment or a question, we will start our second segment today with the Beatitudes. So Thank you for being here. Please remember that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And this is our second hour.
I'm going to go ahead and turn your microphone on. Michael's dialing in. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. Good to hear your voice, Jeannie, as always.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad that you called in today, Michael, and you are going to talk about the Beatitudes. And anybody who would like to have a copy of that, you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and if you click on the worksheets, or start here or the bullseye, the Beatitudes poster is in that list. So you can scroll down past the reality management wake-up sheets, and then there will be the Beatitudes listed in the other worksheets. And we've got every worksheet for every workshop listed there. So you can click on the Beatitudes, and it brings up the poster. You can print it off. You can read it from the website. We also sell them on a really nice parchment-type paper. But that is what the discussion is going to be about today, and we're excited about that. I don't know if Michael's having a challenge getting in here. Let me just double-check with him. All right.
All right. Well, you should be able to hear me, sweetie.
I can hear you now, and Mark is already with us. I've got his microphone on.
Oh, cool. Well, I had a bit of a challenge getting on, but we're here. Welcome, Mark. How do you be, sir?
Oh, very well. Thank you. Great to be here with you both.
Well, delighted to hear your voice. We haven't heard you on the show in a while.
It's good to be with you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I invited Mark to call into the show today. As a result of a still point breathing session that I did on Saturday. And in that still point breathing session, I shared a little bit, I think, on Monday about it, had a really deep experience of energetic movement within my structure. And Mark has created, he's been doing this work for several years now, and he created a Beatitudes podcast sort of thing that he had shared with me, and I had been listening to it, and during my still point session, I just had, like, you know, all the people I've worked with over the years, Mark, you just came in so powerfully, and I actually stepped out of my still point session, at least the awareness of it, to send you a text right in the middle of it. The guidance was so strong to just share that with you. And so that's what led to us being on the show today. I had suggested that instead of us having just a private conversation, we have one that might be fruitful for the whole community to listen to, and of course to be in the archives for future access. So that's kind of why I'm here. How about you, Mark? Any thoughts to share?
I would say
before we
I would say that the attitudes have been a real center point for me over the last handful of years. And it's reflective, of course, in all of your work, Michael. But there was something about the conciseness of these Beatitudes that really spoke to me and helped me navigate back in 2011 to 2014 when I was navigating a mental health crisis. It was these core tools that really, you know, kind of gave me a roadmap, a guide of where I was headed. And it was to a good place, you know, fully healthy today and everything. But there was this desire that birthed in me to do what I could to let people know, like, hey, these are active tools that we can bring into our lives that will help us, you know, really move into our very best life. So it's a huge passion of mine. I love sharing it. I love talking about it. And I am by no means in what I would consider an expert in it. I'm a practical applier of it. And so I know that, you know, there's a lot more that I can even learn And one of the reasons we put out the Beatitudes practice was to start a conversation and to include people with perspectives, you know, to kind of expand that. Like, how do these really benefit our society and our families and us individually?
Right.
So that's what I have to say on it to start.
Cool. Sweet. Well, I'm going to just read my text. And I was in a totally altered state when you just came in so powerfully, and you know, the guidance was to share the thoughts with you. So what I had written to Mark was, I'm a deep stills point session was guided to give you a message about reforming your practice of the Beatitudes. And you know, as we said, Mark's really been working with them. The first one is not Rukkha as just the breath. There are several translators in the of the Aramaic language that translate this word Rukkha as the breath, and particularly as it relates to the Beatitudes. And in the Aramaic, the breath as one of the eternal forces from the Creator. And when we think about the Aramaic, where the Greeks tell us that God sent out his spirit, and the Aramaic doesn't say this, it says God sent out his breath. And there are translators of the Aramaic that just translate this word as breath. And the offering what I was guided to offer to Mark was that it's Rukkha is not just the breath, but that's just one aspect of living in these eternal forces from the Creator. And that ultimately we must yield to all of the eternal forces from God, again called in Aramaic Rukkha. When we let go of the limited Greek idea, Yeshua would say it's all Greek to me, ideas brought to us by many interpreters who have not done the requisite inner work of his Aramaic words, just being about the breath, you can open literally to all of the eternal forces. These forces went undistorted, and in the process at that point, I was shown, I could actually literally feel and for those who've been in intensive, you know, we teach energy field work that we've taught for several decades for returning the core antenna structure of the body, which is the bony structure of the head, the spine, the pelvis, the arms, and the legs. The bones are literally, at least my take, an antenna, and that there are energetic inclinations that come through that antenna. But when carbon-based memory holds something related to that in some form of hostility or fear, greed, grief, pain, trauma, then what happens is that we distort that message, as it were, that inclination. So the rest of the text is for these forces, when undistorted and uninhibited, move, yes, even the bones of your skull, to incline your behavior toward Rukkha's ends rather than those of the past, stored in carbon-based memory and projected into perception. And so recognizing that there are many of these eternal forces, and the first beatitude, you know, it's traditionally interpreted by the Greeks as you whose home, or pardon me, the traditional interpretation, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And you know, if we listen to Yeshua, there's a point where he talks about, you know, the main thing is to stay connected to this eternal force that he's working to connect us with. In fact, he even says, you know, you can deny me, but stay connected to that. And these eternal forces literally are energetic, the energetic impetus, as I understand it, towards certain behaviors. And the Greeks said we were supposed to be poor in that, which is kind of senseless in the context. But when you realize that the word maskini, which in Aramaic is home, that a fly speck on a piece of paper changes that word from home to poor. And one of the ways we know that, you know, there'll be a lot of Western scholars say, oh, no, it was all written down in Greek first, then it was translated into Aramaic. Well, when you look at that one word and you realize that it's kind of senseless to want to be poor in that which Yeshua said his whole purpose was to connect us to, then realize in the Aramaic, the primacy of the Aramaic, that his invitation was that rather than living in the perceptual constructs of our mind, rather than living in carbon-based memory projections, that literally our home, our, like the place where we gather the nourishment, the impetus, the inclination toward behavior, is from these literal eternal forces from the Creator. Or in Aramaic, it's also the word ruach is translated as the active forces from the Creator. And that what mainly came through in that session was just to bring forward the point of there are many of these forces. It's not just the breath. And while the breath is a big key that we want to keep the breath moving and make that a primary thing, it's also many other forces that come through this form that was designed to respond to those eternal forces. Does that fit? Does that make sense for you, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, a couple of notable things on that, and in terms of these active forces, my experience is that God's active forces do show up in a variety of different ways as we're being attuned, as you mentioned. And I know, at least from my lived experience, and you may recall this, but early on when I was, before I was introduced to all this, my body was being put into these yoga positions, and there'd be this like crack and what I know in the Aramaic is called the shem, or this energy force would move through me and this insight would come. And it was kind of strange and unusual and I would call it crazy at the time. You know, today I think it was just an adjustment that was happening after a lot of resistance. I've been in a state of significant resistance. So there was this surrender. And so the surrender into and the allowance of that movement then matured over time. And I remember one day, one of the most unique experiences when I knew I was saved. So this is 2015, and I knew I was saying, and I was telling my then nine-year-old son, Henry, stories every night. And he had asked me, hey, would you tell me a story? After 6 or 7 nights, I was kind of running dry on stories, but needless to say, he asked me again. And that particular night, this voice came through and said, tell him a story, allow the story to come. And so this is another experience of what I would call the active forces of God. So what occurred was I took that breath and then my lips began to move. But I wasn't of that state that I had known me to be before moving them. It was like there was a force coming through, this loving force coming through, moving my lips, and then words started to come out. And I was almost listening to the story as it was coming through my lips. And so that is an example that I cherish because it was a beginning, right? And at the end of that story, which was the best story that ever came through my lips up to that point, I turned to Henry and I said, hey, what'd you think? And he gave me a thumbs up and he said, Dad, that was really good. He said, but it's just going to get better. I know you're just learning. From a 9-year-old.
Wow.
And so that's just another example. I mean, these active forces of God can come through us in a variety of ways. And I know in the audio, it's very heavily centric on the breath. And I went back and listened to it after you shared it. It's like, and you're right. You know, it needs to be expanded a bit. I had written about 80 or 90 pages of Beatitudes Practice discussion guide. And in there, I break down the words and certainly... For example, here on page 14, it says, you know, it talks about the English, Aramaic, Greek, and Hebrew, because I'm trying to navigate, you know, all of them. But the opening line here about this word is that it's translated as breath rather than spirit, they can mean breath, wind, what is empty or transitory, spirit, seat of emotion, disposition, life, like all these things. And it goes on to talk about this active force that I pulled from what you shared many years ago with me, because I know that that's there, but I was thinking when I was putting together these Beatitudes practices that the name that I put on the breath is really kind of that center point from my action. You know, if I hold my breath, I resist these active forces coming through. And so I probably oversimplified it, and there's probably a way to mature that, you know, because it was years ago that I actually did those recordings, and enrich it so that it's more true to what my lived experience is as well.
Sweet. Well, when you talk about that sharing with your son, and my input would be from a previous experience, which I'll share, is that probably your son was right there attuned as you were, and it was probably a cooperative story that came through you. one of my most profound experiences of my life, and the first deep taste of being out of my mind and living in being was when I caught my daughter as she was being born at home. And when her head delivered into my hands, you know, they say a child can't focus their eyes for several days after birth. She was laser focused, looked in my eyes, and grinned at me. And that put me into a state that was, I mean, I literally had no mind. It was a Friday afternoon. At 3:40 in the afternoon, we realized my wife was in labor. And at 4:40, Krista Joy delivered into my hands. We had a classroom. We lived in Atlanta at the time. I had a classroom in my home. And it was a Friday evening, and at 7 o'clock, we were starting a class with people coming from several different parts of the country. And this was back before cell phones. She doesn't like hearing me say it, but 40. She'd been circling the earth for 40 years, but we didn't have cell phones, and there was one person in particular that was driving up from Miami, and I couldn't very well let him arrive at my door and say, too bad, we just had a baby, we're canceling, you can drive back to Miami. This was from Atlanta. So at 7 o'clock, newborn baby, 4:40 to 7 o'clock in my arms, walked and, you know, greeted people at the door coming in for the class. They're like, no, she wasn't just born a couple hours ago. No, I mean, yeah, no. Said, yeah, she was. And I went down to the classroom, and the only way I've been able to describe it and see if this fits for you when you started to tell the story, it was like my mind and my lips had been buttered. I could not think a thought. There was no thought in my mind. There was no activity or action of carbon-based memory. It was just direct transmission to the point where I didn't know what I was going to say next, and I literally went and got a recorder. Somehow or other, in the last 40 years, those recordings disappeared, but I went and got a recorder, and I recorded that whole weekend. I did a 27-hour class that weekend and didn't think a thought the whole weekend. It put me into such an altered state. And, you know, to me, it just ties in. And when you look at the promised result of this first beatitude, the Greeks tell us that you'll be in the kingdom of heaven. In Aramaic, Malkuta Dishmea literally means you'll be in the community of love at what was called a heavenly estate, that you'll be connected fully to the presence of active love. And I noticed that, you know, as you were describing that opening for you, that's exactly where you were, was in that connected space, and that's exactly what this beatitude promises.
And it, as you know, and beautiful story, by the way, I love that. And as you know, it develops into something that I would say becomes something more consistent. One of the things that for me, because I was coming out of, I would say I was predominantly living in my carbon-based mind, you know, through my life in those middle years, and then had this break or this shift between 2011 and 15, started in 2011. And then what began to occur is everything became reoriented in my life. And so after the example of sharing with Henry, I went to a business conference, and it would show up there. People would come up and were coming up to me in the conference about a dozen times saying, hey, can I talk to you? And we'd talk, and then I'd hear this voice like, hey, let them, you know, kind of experience this. And they were experiencing it. Of course, I was too, because I was in awe. And as you know, being in that state, it's just this awe state. So I was seeing the bounce from being in that state to being, you know, not as fully in that state. And kind of, so for, probably 18 months or so, just kind of seeing the contrast more and more and more, and the, some of the other Beatitudes, you know, can help, you know, bring light, you know, if we wanted to talk more about some of the other ones, either today or another time, but can bring more light to the dynamics that were occurring. But it was just a continuation of, I call it a maturing of, a surrendering into allowance, and that piece of making a home in, you know, as the Beatitude begins. One of the things that has become more clear for me in my lived experience is what that means. What does that mean to make a home in, instead of poor in spirit, but to make a home in? And it's really to release all that is in the way of those active forces coming online. You know, and I use the word online with intention because I have had that experience. It's almost like a computer. You know, if you had a computer that was connected to, you know, the most pure source of content, and I know it's not, but from the internet standpoint, let's just say a computer connected to the internet and not connected. Well, if I'm connected to the internet, there's this source of lots of new insights and information and tools, et cetera, that aren't available on a computer that's not connected. Well, if we look at our own life and say, well, wow, there's this source of power and love and just, you know, clarity, et cetera, that is right there for ours to have. But if we judge it or we're holding on to a past belief that is in conflict, you know, and keeps us, you know, hidden or hides that active force, you know, from us, these Beatitudes actually lift the veil. And they lift that veil and allow for this to come into our being in the way that is most effective for us, because that's the beauty of this, you know, it's this gentle power that knows that, okay, Michael, your experience of you speaking for 27 hours and teaching without a thought, right, without a thought of where you're going to go next or what you might say next, just but being fully immersed in that presence of pure source coming through or being that, that was something that obviously has stuck with you for 40 years. And you could tell thousands more stories, I know. But that is an example of how you could receive the active forces of God coming through you in that moment. I think that one of my experiences is, as I've spoken with people who practice this, is it'll show up how you most need to experience it. And that is almost like a birthing of a desire for more. Like, this is amazing. This is incredible. This is powerful. What else? And there's a clearing that happens in those first three Beatitudes that get repeated to really open up to that, allow for the emotions to really move through us and be purified, you know, through Beatitude 2, and allow for this willingness to let things be different than the way that we had perceived it. You know, it's the love of truth challenge, right? But to let, in Beatitude 3, like let go of attachment to how we think it is and allow for our life to really expand into what it is that, you know, we're being brought to. But the first three Beatitudes are really clearing, and that's why the fourth Beatitude is those who hunger for this. But there's a clearing that happens that really opens the space and clears out, you know, anything that might be an obstacle to you fully coming into the world, that second coming concept of coming fully in and allowing that Christ consciousness to fully be alive in our life.
Doing the work. You know, moving from, you know, alternating between being in those, that energy experience, to being in the constructs of our minds. You go back to Yeshua, he talks about, you know, don't judge by appearances. Every construct of carbon-based memory of the mind is simply a construct, and it isn't true except as a reflection of whatever's held in carbon-based memory. So certainly alternating between, I had another opening experience, actually a few years before that one with Krista, and it was just such a profound, as what I would call my ego state, was trying to get my attention and come back here, hey, look at what I've got. And it was kind of represented by my mind at that time as this playful little puppy that's got something in its mouth that it wants to meet, you know, attract me to. And it's like, I'm going to give this state up for that. Thank you very much. And at that point, it was about a year, you know, issues in my life, relationship issues and that sort of things. It was about a year before any of those issues had, I kind of fell back into some of them and realized that was the next layer of work that I needed to do. But definitely stepping into healing crisis and crossing through it, it's like, which voice are we going to listen to? And that physiologically our structure, you know, if I go back to my early electronics work, the shape of an antenna determines the frequency it receives. And I made reference in that note to you. It was really in the forefront at that point that literally the movement of the antenna, which the core of it, you know, you think about how complex the bones of the cranium are, the connection into the spine. And people think that the baby's soft spot, once it hardens, that the baby's head is fixed, but actually we have a continuously self-adjusting antenna system. Your head, my head, your whole structure is in a state of continuous motion driven by these eternal forces. And when we've been physically or emotionally traumatized, if you remember the hands-on energy field work from the intensive, is designed to break loose physical or emotional trauma in the antenna that restricts its range of motion, that restricts the energy patterns that are designed to come in. And when somebody's been severely emotionally or physically traumatized, then the signals aren't available because the antenna is damaged. And in that still point session last Saturday, I mean, I could literally feel each bone in my head moving separately at a level that I've never, you know, I've always known it was there and worked with it as an antenna and developed how to adjust it to bring it back into full alignment. But it was just so deeply profound at that moment that these are where the eternal forces come in. These are where the energetic impetus come from, where it's received from source. And if I don't have things in carbon-based memory that distort it, I get that pure inclination, and it's always 100% right on target. If carbon-based memory has resonance with whatever that particular piece of guidance is, then oftentimes we'll fall into carbon-based memory's fear or rage or grief or whatever it happens to be, greed, pain, trauma, will fall into that and do that instead. And that's when we're out of alignment with that guidance system. And, you know, it was actually the second time through, this goes back now, about the time my daughter was being born that I got involved in the Aramaic itself. And I can remember sitting and using the dictionary from the Enlightenment book and writing out the Beatitudes longhand. And I actually suggest that to people, that they take that book and use the dictionary and go back and get their own sense of it. But it was, you know, in my world, the training that my carbon-based memory had was, well, the Beatitudes are, you know, a nice philosophy from Yeshua. Well, what I got the second time I was literally writing it longhand and going back and forth, and at that point, my partner in creating Laws of Living back at that time Dan McDougald, and I'd go back and forth with him on definitions. And, I mean, we'd have an hour-long conversation around the simple refinement of one word. And it was the second time of writing it out longhand that it was like, oh, my God, this is a set of instructions for how to activate the underlying neural structures that the Creator put in us from the beginning. It's there. It's just been subverted. You know, if we look at that, the word tuvehun, it's a three-part word. And, you know, a tuv is this attitude of mind, and there's one that the Creator put in us from the beginning. It's designed to be the, you know, just like the operating system in the computer, when you use that analogy, it's designed to be the operating system for everything output from the mind. And this is how to bring that operating system back online. That's what this set of Beatitudes are from Yeshua. And yeah, I'm planning to go through the whole Beatitudes poster, which, by the way, anybody who's listening, if you want to access it, Ginny has already put a link into the notes, I'm sure. And so if you go to whyagain.org, and there's a picture of a microphone on the homepage, scroll down, hit that, drill down, and you'll find the notes for today, and there'll be a link to the Beatitudes poster, which you can also print off just straight up from our website if you go to whyagain.org. But, yeah, it's a set of full instructions and, you know, speaks about the work that's going to need to be done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I wanted to build on that. I love the work that you and Dan and your teams have done over the years to bring this out. And I've not just me, but so many have been the beneficiaries of that. And as I was exploring and navigating, you know, okay, why are these things happening in my healing process? Because I was, of course, I knew the material from the Why Again workshop and had been doing, you know, worksheets, et cetera. And around the time when this was really coming online for me to investigate, you had suggested the same thing, like, hey, write it out, the definitions, and it was very helpful.
Right.
But I also had
That's a powerful exercise, isn't it?
It's incredibly powerful because it does add depth, you know, and meaning. And one of your other students, Dale Allen Hoffman, did a lot with the Beatitudes and his work, you know, I looked into, and he's done a remarkable job. And then JM, who wrote Way of Mastery, has done a remarkable job.
Right.
And so I had the benefit of, and I know, I think it's Douglas Klotz or something had done stuff. I didn't study his as much, but
Neil,
I was really drawn to look at JM, Dale, and your interpretations, kind of bring them together for me to see, like, okay, why are they using this a little bit differently, or is it the same? And I'll tell you what, once I went through that and got to a clear point, that's what launched the Attitudes practice. And once I then did the audio part, I started writing this book to kind of get to a deeper understanding. And it was in the writing of the book where I was looking at the Greek and the Aramaic and the English and the Hebrew and stuff, and I realized, you know, it's not that it's wrong, right? It's not, you know, because I, for a long time, by the way, I used to think, oh, my gosh, you know, who is the idiot who wrote down blessed are the poor in spirit, you know, for there's the kingdom of heaven, because it seemed like Greek to me. But one of the things that you said is like, hey, they got one letter wrong, right? So instead of home, they used poor. But when we look at the combination and the true understanding upon reflection, it's like, okay, I could see it in some of these other translations, but it wasn't a complete picture. It was almost like what you pointed out with me with the whole emphasis on the breath rather than the active forces. You know, it was not that it was wrong. It was just incomplete in terms of the full breadth of what could be expressed. And that's how I started to look back and like, okay, it's not that these guys were translators were the idiots that I made them out to be. They were just going through the lens of the perceptual worldview that they had at the time when they were doing the translation, and they either missed it, assuming they didn't do it intentionally, that they missed it from the completion of it, the fullness of it, the breadth of it. And what a great time in our history to have more clarity on these Beatitudes practice become available to every person on the planet. because it's needed now more than ever. You know, it's always been there. So it's been right in front of our face. But at least for me, I don't know about you, but prior to really tapping into this Aramaic view, it was very tough to gain any kind of value out of these Beatitudes. As from a humility standpoint, I know a lot of people have studied this and have put a lot of work out there, a lot of pastors and priests and, you know, people, you know, have studied Scripture. And they've had their own interpretations of these, but I've never heard it as a practice prior to, you know, this work.
Oh, too. And it's not, you know, you go back again to Yeshua, and he says, first of all, in order for his work to be useful to you, you've got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. For he who having eyes does not see, and he who having ears does not perceive. In other words, our perceptual constructs can't reflect anything other than what's in them. And so if we don't have the brain cells for what that reflect the brain cells he was working from, then, you know, we can't even tap into what was being said. There's an interesting line. There's a movie out there. It's kind of a violent movie, not very kind, but it's called The Accountant. And it's pretty powerful. But there's a song at the end of it, the thing that impressed me when I heard this was like, wow. And the song, the key line in the song at the end of that movie was, you can't read a book that you haven't written. And that's why I suggest to virtually everybody who's interested in Beatitudes that they write it out, because you've got to write it. You've got to develop the brain cells individually before carbon-based memory can serve it up as a perceptual construct. Otherwise, the perceptual construct is going to be off base. And then if you look at, you know, the poster, I assume you've got a copy of the Beatitudes poster, and at the bottom of it we talk about the greatest and second commandment, and that the instruction there was one of, you've got to have this gateway open in the frontal lobes of the brain that opens a pathway for human life to come into our human form, Rachma.
Well, and I think that, I apologize if I had just interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, go for it.
Well, you just hit on something that's really, really key. So when someone starts to open up to this practice, there's you may have experiences that are unique. You know, I mean, listen to Michael's story and my story of my son and Michael's, you know, teaching after the birth of his daughter. And again, those are just a couple of thousands of stories we both could tell, but there's a surrender into letting things come forth through you in the adjustment process. I remember one time I was sitting in my bed and my hand moved off of my lap and grabbed a particular book, and I was watching it happen. And it's like, huh, that's interesting. Now, this was after I'd already had the yoga experiences where my body was put in the yoga position, so it wasn't that unusual for me, but for most people listening, it's probably kind of unusual. So, but that was part of what needed to happen in that particular moment, and it was just a witnessing. And I often have shared with people that imagine that, and I use my fist just as a symbol, imagine that the fist represents the core of our being for a moment, and that in that core of our being is that pure essence of that life force, you know, that is keeping us alive, that's you know, animating us, if you will. And then we create these walls and blocks and layers, as everybody listening knows from this work, that we kind of create this outer mask. Well, the outer mask might have a perceptual idea that it is something that's real. And so in the process of going through the Beatitudes, there's a dissolution or dismantling of the outer mask, and that can feel kind of unusual changing from scary, perhaps, to holy, if you will, would be to say, hey, it's okay for the outer mask to fall away. It's okay for it to integrate back into the full expression of the life force that's in me. Well, if I'm keeping alive that mask, even if it's unconscious, right? If I'm keeping alive that mask, then that inner force, that life force is going to find a way if we're willing. And one of the things that, you know, we hear in the Beatitudes is it does bring online. It's a practice that activates these life forces coming online. And then there's so much more that comes with the other. We break it down into 10 Beatitudes. And if we can look at the idea that, okay, if that life force was, in my experience with the hand moving, was saying, okay, and it was right after a prayer, by the way. I said, hey, God, if there's a way to heal this, show me the way. I'm yours. I do whatever you want, kind of thing. And it was in that moment, seconds later, that my hand moved and grabbed that book. And it's like, okay, that is the life force. That's the life force saying, okay, you want me to come and be with you and be fully alive, then there's some things that you're going to need to let go of. And for me, I had to let go that the world is the way it is. That was just my path. I perceived that, well, it's this way. This is the way it's always been. This is the way the world is. And so to let go of a perception that the world is, you know, unified already or perfect as it is or whatever it is, not perfect in the way that a spiritual person might say, but I had an idea that, you know, something had to be, you know, literally in my mind perfect, right? And that all collapsed. But it took time, you know, because it took a little bit of trust, for example, allowing my hand to move. You know, I could have resisted it. You know, I had the ability to say, I'm going to override this. This is freaking me out. I don't like that my hand's moving apparently on its own, or that in the story of telling the story with Henry, that my lips apparently were moving and I apparently wasn't moving them, but I was. You know, it was just the expression of the purity of that life force that was coming through that was inviting me to say, oh, wait, maybe it's different than I'm perceiving. Maybe the way I've been holding on to my life isn't accurate. And do I want to keep this mask alive or allow it to truly, you know, die and have that source of life, you know, rebirth it into something constructive? And it's been a journey. It's been a whole lot of fun. And these Beatitudes, you know, if you are really interested and really studying and really practicing, they will change your life in a radical way. And Jesus was radical, right? I mean, it was a radical idea at the time. And unfortunately,
well, I think that's why they turned it into Greek philosophy was, wait a minute, we got to cover this up. We got to get rid of this impetus towards something other than what the king wants.
It's unfortunately true.
Now, when he says, in order for you to live, you've got to die, he's talking about that mask self, that non-being self, and making room for a total rebuild. And that's going to mean physiology as well. You know, in the East, they called it Kundalini, and they have this theory that it was an energy that resided in the base of the spine, that came up the spine and, you know, did what it did. But in fact, what my take on what Kundalini is, I think they've misinterpreted it in the East. You know, wherever there are dis-ease energies that are out of alignment with the perfect flow through this antenna structure called a body-mind unit, wherever it's out of alignment, there are blocks. And when we start to move toward alignment, then the blocks are going to start to move and be undone, and the energy will appear wherever the blocks are. So I've seen Kundalini energy appear in the base of the skull, in a foot, in a hand, in an arm, actually anywhere that there's injury or dis-ease, come into alignment, then a full complement of energy comes through, and it literally starts to punch through the disease processes, and it can be pretty intense. In the East, there's a whole lot of macho and a whole lot of sexual impropriety, and so where did they think the Kundalini came from was the base of the spine, because it was cracking through, breaking through sexual issues, held sexual energy that people had. But the truth is, it can show up anywhere, and it will literally realign. When I hear you talking about going into that posture, your structure was saying, okay, so this is what we need to do to open that part of the antenna so that a full flow of energy will come through. And it's Rachma, you know, the first commandment was, and commandment in law, when they said, you know, what's most important in the law, the Greek culture has us believing that law is the rule of a superior. And it's not the rule of a superior. Law is simply the way it works. So when they said to him, you know, the question more accurately would have probably been, what do we have to do to function as humans? And he says, first order business. You've got to have Rachma, that filter in the frontal lobes of the brain, that is the gateway for love to enter human life and keep your perceptual system on track with love. When you think of the Creator, when you think of neighbor, in order to maintain self, this is how we are restored to and maintain our human lives, which is the presence of love. And then the 10 most important words, if you look at, you know, if you've got the Beatitudes poster there, the bottom line in that poster has the 10 most important words that he and anybody on earth has ever have ever spoken. And what it says is, upon these two commandments hang the law and its prophets. So when you talked about, you know, people who interpreted through the Greek and blah, 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 well, it was sort of there, but it wasn't really there. What was going on? What he was saying is that in order to pick that book up that was called Scripture and understand it properly, you've got to have this connection to the eternal forces, and you need to be aligned with that. Otherwise, your carbon-based memory is going to interpret whatever's in carbon-based memory. And if he wants you to believe that, well, what you're supposed to do is, yeah, you're supposed to be loving, but then when I tell you to go to war, you're supposed to go kill people. If that's what's been programmed in carbon-based memory, then people will take the Scriptures and they'll read them in a way that justifies war and killing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what's in carbon-based memory. But this, you know, when you realize that being in alignment with the active presence of love, then you pick that book up, then you can come from the brain cells that Yeshua had when he spoke those thoughts. And of course, the Aramaic takes you closer and closer and closer to where you can more easily open to align with that understanding.
Well, and along those lines,
I was just going to say, the whole thing hangs on, literally, is the active presence of love the predominant resonant energy that's alive in you. If it is, then you're going to be on track with what's in that book, and if not, you're going to project into it whatever's in carbon-based memory.
And I think that one of the things that you just highlighted was with the evidence that people have experienced in their physical life, one of the things that's in this carbon-based memory is the idea of suicide. And one of the things that I've experienced with dealing with people who have suicidal thoughts is that what they are, and I had suicidal thoughts and I had murderous thoughts back in 2011 when I was going through my whole mental health stuff. And as I really surrendered into this, it began to appear as this recognition that what I wanted to die of was this false idea of who I was. And it came up in the way of suicide. And then once I believed, you know, which was also just kind of more of a false idea coming from an over-enthusiastic imagination, I wanted to believe that I was awakened fully at the time. And so I wanted other people to. And the idea that purposely, I guess, put into my head for maybe this conversation or maybe some of the other things I'll be teaching, but was this idea that I had to kill. And the idea of kill would cycle around. And someone who's experienced bipolar, which I did, and mania, those thoughts, they don't get softer. They get tighter and tighter and tighter unless they're interrupted. Goal canceling and a number of practices.
Forgiveness is definitely key.
support interrupting the cycle. And so one day, as I did a goal cancel on, like, cancel my goal to kill, right? And this is all in my head, but I'm processing it in that moment. And I finally got to a place, I said, well, what does kill mean? And this whole storyline came out. It's like I had a perception that to kill would be to allow other people to have their first death and awaken. I mean, what a screwy idea, right? But that's how the carbon-based mind can misappropriate dialogue, readings, even from scripture, like you said, because I got that from scripture. You know, you won't taste the second death kind of thing. And the idea that started to surface for me over time is, oh my gosh, these concepts of murder and suicide, they're off, of course, and we can help get someone back online with these tools to support people in recognizing just consciously, like, oh, wait, what if it was true that you didn't actually want to leave the planet, but you actually just wanted to let go of the life that you have been living and have the full expression of that life force that wants to fully live come forward? And if someone could cognitively understand that that might be what it is, then we may have a lot more people saying, oh, sign me up. Like, let me do some more worksheets. You know, let me do some more mind shifters, you know, whatever it is, to help people shed those parts that aren't living in the purity of who we truly are.
So I'm thinking it's probably, Jeannie would probably have a better, she distinguishes one year from another better than I do, but about 15 years ago, we actually did a family trip to Hawaii, and we had planned it as part of doing some workshops there, and we spoke at Unity in Diamond Head, and we did a week of workshops, and we were going to be on the islands for a couple more weeks, and the Unity minister contacted us and said, you know, you guys are going to be here for a while longer. Will you come back and do another series? We just really got a lot of accolades out of that week of workshops, and we don't usually do that, go back to a place, you know, but 6 weeks later, it was actually kind of tough because we had to stay an extra 2 weeks in Hawaii in February. It was difficult, but we did it. But anyway, we went back and did another week-long series. There's Sunday service, another week-long series. And we had three people came to us and said, when I was here 6 weeks ago and did that Sunday forgiveness workshop, with three people who said they were planning their suicide and that they were so delighted that they got the understanding and had no interest in suicide anymore, had challenges, had some deep work to do, but were finished with suicide. So it's powerful when people get a hold of the tools and start to shift that carbon-based memory. And to me, just having the information, the knowledge that hostility and fear always is an indicator, it's like the warning signal from the creator, the carbon-based memory is offline, off base, and needs correction, needs healing. And that, you know, to listen to anything it has to say is just a gross error, and we need to get back in alignment with human life, the restoration of love, so that whatever is in carbon-based memory, if it's so far off base as to be that destructive, that energy can be transmuted or forgiven, can be removed from the structure. And going back through, I mean, we're talking about dealing with and healing generations and generations and generations of those kinds of dynamics. You know, we did an online in codependence to independence communication practicum back a few months ago, and this young lady who's probably out there listening on the show right now, Magda, in that intensive, she was dealing with some heart issues and was actually going to the hospital, and her assignment was to ask her generations about issues of the heart. And when she shared in the intensive what happened between her and her deceased grandfather as a result of a mind shifter around the issues of the heart and the generations. And then she called in the show. I'll send you a link to that show. It's about 20 or 25 minutes, but such a profound, and I mean, second time I heard it was when she called into the show and shared it, but it left me in tears as she dealt with a grandfather who had come over from Europe and was, you know, ostensibly coming to the land of milk and honey and streets paved in gold, and found himself having to dig a hole in the ground for his family to have a hovel to live in, and the terror of, you know, were they going to have enough to eat the crops, were they going to come in, and his abuse of his wife and his children. Just, I mean, it's such a powerful piece of work to open and be able to go to those generational patterns and heal them. Just, you know, monumental. And maybe Jeannie,
yeah,
could put a link to that in the notes, and I'll go ahead, Mark, and send you a link to that. You probably find it interesting. It's a powerful sharing.
I know we're getting close to the end. I was going to share one more story, but I
go for it.
So this is a very personal story, but along those lines of kind of that suicidal ideation, because I know in the world today, I mean, the numbers are off the charts in terms of people who are struggling with mental health kind of challenges, anxiety, depression, et cetera. I mean, I think it's underreported, but the numbers are four times what they were just a couple of years ago. And a couple studies I've seen with hundreds of thousands of people have highlighted that about 80% of people are dealing with this. And suicidal ideation can come from a number of different areas. And I wanted to share this quick story where one of my children actually had been just angry and spouting off that he wanted to kill himself. And he said it enough that my wife, you know, after work one day, she's like, hey, you need to talk. He keeps saying this. So I sat him down and I said, well, what's going on? Mom says you're saying these things that you want to kill yourself. And he said, yeah. And I said, okay. And mind you, I'd been well-trained in all this work, so I was able to stay present and cancel all my goals for him to live and all that stuff. So I was really there with him. And I said, well, what do you think is going to happen, you know, if you do that? And he said, well, everything will be better, was his response. I said, well, what do you mean? And he described his fantasy of what his life would be like after. And I said, okay, what if you're wrong to me? And because he hadn't considered that he might be wrong, because his perception from everything he had learned, the way he took in the information, was that this other place was going to be so much better than this place. And I said, yeah, what if you're wrong? What if you do that, the same work that you could do here in a body, you know, and actually get to the other side of it and live a full life? What if you still have to do that work wherever you go? What if that work doesn't go away? And
Mark,
the conversation
continues.
The phone's
going to cut us off. The phone's going to cut us off, or the show. But maybe we can pick this up tomorrow if you've got the space.
Sure.
Okay. Let's do it. Blessings, everybody.